And now it's time for Power of Prophecy with your host, former professor at the University of Texas at Austin, career United States Air Force officer, and best-selling author, Tex Mars.
Hello, friends. This is Tex Mars. Welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. Well, I want to tell you, we've got a powerhouse hour today planned for you. And I've got a good friend with me here, Daniel Patrick. Daniel Patrick. Now, he's written a terrific book. And, you know, just a couple times every year, I come across a book that I can highly recommend to you. But this is the first book in a number of years that I've come across that has such important prophetic import. It's entitled The Matrix of Gog. The Matrix of Gog. Now, I've always been excited about the story of Gog from the land of Magog that's revealed in our Holy Bible. It's a prophetic story, and it tells us that Gog is a demonic entity, but he evidently takes on the character of a human being. Perhaps the Antichrist. We'll ask our guest today that. But Gog from Magog brings great tragedy and heartbreak to the world. And finally, we see in Ezekiel 38:39 that he actually invades the land of unwalled villages. Now, that's evidently Israel, or the country called Israel, in the last days. And from there, he builds a great empire on earth. He certainly has others assisting him in this endeavor. And there's going to be a great, great war, World War III. He'll even bring fire, it says, to the Isles. That very well has an import, a meaning for the United States, Great Britain, the countries that we call the Isles. So it's going to be World War III, and it's going to go all the way down to the wire. In fact, you'll read in the last part of the book of Revelation, in Revelation 20, it says that he comes up on the breadth of the entire earth. He conquers the entire earth, and he comes up against the camp of the saints. The camp of the saints. Wherever you as a Christian are, you're going to meet great opposition. In fact, Revelation 13 says, he, this beast, this Gog, will make war against the saints and overcome them. That's right. He even overcomes us, you and I, for a short while. But finally, we know that God will come to our rescue. God will come, and with the brightness of a great light, perhaps what we would conceive of as a nuclear exchange, or maybe some other kind of light. You know, God has his own weapons, I suppose. He will destroy Gog from the land of Magog, throw him into the lake of fire, and, well, that'll be the end of things, won't it, here on earth. So this is extremely important. Now, Daniel Patrick sent me his manuscript for this book. It was in manuscript form, and I immediately saw how important this book was. And I'll tell you, I was also impressed with Daniel Patrick's writing style, because he's sort of a straight-ahead man. You know what I mean by that? He's a direct guy. He doesn't waste any, you know, punches. We were just talking before the program. He said he used to be a boxer, an amateur boxer, when he was in the Navy. Well, I can understand that. And that's the way he writes. He punches out the words, and they're very, very effective, and they're very biblical. The Matrix of Gog, subtitled, From the Land of Magog Came the Khazars. Ah, yes, the Khazars to Destroy and Plunder. Daniel Patrick, welcome to Power of Prophecy.
Well, Tex, I am so glad to be here. I'm really excited. This is just a tremendous, I'm just nervous. I'm a little nervous. Yeah, I felt you.
That's okay.
And this kind of reminded me of the first time I ever got in the ring. I'm an artist. I'm usually behind the scenes and working on my projects, in which I've worked all around the world on. And I'm not used to coming out in public, but I've always been gripped by prophecy. Ever since I got saved, right after I got out of the Navy back in 1967. And from there on, I was involved in the Jesus movement. I designed and printed all different types of tracts, worked for several big ministries, went to Bible college. And I have always listened to all the usual suspects on this stuff, beginning with Hal Lindsey and John Wolford and the new guys, Grant Jeffries and all these fellows. And it just left me with a real taste. I knew we were in the end of times. This is the end of the show here we're coming up on. And I know that God's prophecies never fail. And this is one of the hallmarks of how to know that God's real. God put that in the Word. He says that the prophecies are proved that He is God. He says the things that are going to come to pass, they come to pass, and boom, we know that the Bible is inspired. This is one of the main proofs for the Holy Scriptures, is the fact that it has this theme of prophecy running through it. So I've always been interested in prophecies, the messianic prophecies, and the prophecies about other nations, and especially the prophecies regarding the end.
Well, Daniel, I've seen your artwork. You were kind enough to send me a couple of pictures, and it's really sort of an epic style. Very, very impressive artwork. You served in the Navy, of course. You graduated from Bible college. And here's what gripped me about your book. There's a school of thought out there. You call it a paradigm. It is a paradigm, a way of thinking about prophecy. And it's not biblical. You cannot find the scriptures to support it, but it is taken hold of the Christian world, of Christian evangelical world, and it's called Christian Zionism, and it basically says whatever Israel does is right, even if it's wrong, it's right, and we as Christians are to support the Jews, and the Jews are, of course, God's chosen, that's what we're told. And if they want to start World War III, well, the United States must enter it with them. If they want nuclear weapons and missiles and submarines, then we've got to give it to them. And so they could do no wrong. And, of course, the very symbol of Israel, of the Jews, is the six-pointed star. And I see many people wearing that hideous six-pointed star, thinking that they're doing God a great service. But evidently, you have challenged this with your book. You've come up directly against it. And the impressive thing, Daniel, is that you use the Bible as a sword, as a weapon, which is what it's supposed to be used for. It's something that cuts through all the nonsense, cuts through all the propaganda, and you go right to the Bible and say, what did God say about this? And then, of course, you link in history and archaeology and even DNA science. And you finally build up, and we discover then that Israel is far different than what people think it is. And the strong delusion that is warned about in 2 Thessalonians is here upon us. I mean, you're taking on the whole supposed Christian world with your book. Are you aware of that?
I'm extremely aware of that. That's why I'm so nervous. That's why I was telling you. I feel like I'm getting in the ring with Goliath here.
And, No, you've got Goliath on your side.
They don't realize
that he's accompanied you into the ring. Not Goliath, but David. Well, I mean, you've got David on your side. You've got God on your side. You say if you come up in the ring against Goliath. That is true, because Goliath is the demonic entity.
That's exactly true. It reminds me of what Elisha, remember when he was coming out and all the Syrian army had come down there and they step out of their house and and they look out there, and there's all these army, and Elijah says, Lord, I pray that you open the eyes of the young man. And it says, the Lord opened the eyes of the young man, and he saw, and behold, the mountain, the horses, full of horses and chariots of fire, round about Elijah's head. There be more with us than there are with him. I believe that. I believe that, you know, it's just a matter of fear. You know, Jesus said, fear not them which kill the body or are not able to kill the soul, but rather fear him which is able to destroy both soul and body in hell. And fear not man whose breath is in his nostrils, for whereof is he to be accounted of? You know, the fear of man brings a snare, but whoso puts trust in the Lord shall be saved. So we have to stand on the word, and it's a fight. Most Christians don't realize they're in a war. They're sitting there in the pew and listening to the, you know, some pulpit platitudes for, you know, half an hour, so they can get back to the dinner and the football game in the afternoon, and they forget that they're actually in a war, and they don't realize that what's happening in these last days is a gigantic war of deception. When the apostles asked Jesus, they said, Lord, what will be the sign of thy coming and of the end of the world, the end of the age? And he said, first words out of his mouth, take heed that no man deceive you. And he says that five different times in that chapter 24 in the discourse on the end. And I think what we've got going here is a gigantic deception. People need to turn off turn off the television. They should get your book on the DNA science of the Khazars, pick up this book on Gog and Magog, and really find out that this is a battle they're in, and it's a battle that's going to, like, they haven't even realized how they're being led into a trap, and it's an ideological trap, and it's going to be against, and this is a war against Christians. Gog is the enemy of Christianity, and he's warring against Christians, and this is what the prophecy is about. Ezekiel 38, I'm actually turning this thing upside down, because the key to this stuff is the identity of Gog. Who is Gog? Now, most of these guys, though, will start off, well, nobody knows the identity of Gog, and then they immediately launch in to Meshach and Tubal being Russia, and then they show you all the might and power of Russia, and then they freak everybody out that this guy's going to come down and invade Israel sometime in the future. Well, the reality is the invasion of Gog has already started, and it's already been going on. We're approaching the end of this thing, and for whatever reasons, God, sometimes I say, well, God, why didn't you just make this a little clearer to us so we could have understood this stuff? And the only scripture I can think of is where Jesus told them. He says, now I have told you these things before it comes to pass, that when it has come to pass, you might believe. Sometimes God just seems to, cloak some things in obscurity, but maybe we would interfere too much, or if we knew the fight. You know, it's like, I don't think the devil really understood what he was doing when he had Christ crucified, you know, because he didn't quite get that scripture about the resurrection from the dead. That was even held back from the apostles' minds. They couldn't figure out what he was talking about. They thought it must be spiritual, but no, it was a literal thing that was going to happen. And, you know, thou wilt not leave my soul in hell, neither shalt thou suffer thine Holy One to see corruption. That was a pretty obscure, what did that mean? But they understood it as soon as he came back from the dead. So that's what I look at this, and I realize I'm turning this thing upside down. And the way I began to approach this is always interested in prophecy, and I understood from the New Testament that you got the verse there in 1 Thessalonians, the Jews, which killed the Lord Jesus and their own prophets and are contrary to all men, forbidding us to preach the gospel unto the Gentiles that they might be saved, for the wrath of God has come upon them from the uttermost. You got those scriptures in Revelation chapter 2 and Revelation chapter 3 about them. Out of Jesus' own mouth, he says, I know the lies of those who say they are Jews and are not, but are of the synagogue of Satan. And then Jesus' words to the Jews there in Matthew 21. He says, he gives them the parable about the vineyard and the Lord had a vineyard, and he lent it out to husbandmen, and he sent some servants to get the tithe during the time of harvest, and they beat one and killed another, and he said, I'll send a whole bunch of servants. He said, last, I'm going to send my own son. They'll honor him. And they said, this is the heir. Let's kill him, and then his inheritance will be ours. And so Jesus was talking about the Pharisees, and he said, what do you think was going to happen to those husbandmen when the the Lord of the vineyard finds me, oh, he's going to come down and miserably kill them. And he said, therefore, the kingdom of God shall be taken away from you and given to a nation bringing forth the fruits thereof. And we see all this stuff happening in the New Testament. But then you've got this kind of schizophrenic attitude of some of these prophecy teachers that, for some reason, God now in the Palestine is blessing all these Jews to come back, take all the land that was never theirs nor any of their forebears, and kill everybody that's in the land, initiate a lot of wars through subterfuge and, you know, weapons of mass destruction that were never there, and get us all involved in one of these wars that are going to lead to the final conflagration, which they hope to bring about their new world order.
Now, I'm on page 11 of your book, okay? Let's just start from the beginning here. Chapter 1 of your book asks the question, Daniel, who is Gog? You know, this is really the mystery part of the scriptures, Gog and Magog. And for centuries, Christians have asked, who is this? Who is this Gog from Magog? And really, no one has answered it properly. But I am confident that God has given you the answer to this riddle. Now, you start off by quoting Ezekiel 38, verses 1 and 2. The word of the Lord came unto me, saying, Son of man, set thy face against Gog and prophesy against him. Now, this is what your book is about, isn't it? I mean, you're being told, you and I, and really every Christian listening to us today, you're told, whatever you do, the word of the Lord says, set your face against Gog and prophesy against him. You're prophesying against Gog from the land of Magog. That's what your whole book is about. Am I correct?
That's right. That's right. It's exactly right. You know, and the problem is, what's happened today is instead of the majority of the Christian world, I'm talking about evangelicals, fundamentalists, and charismatics, and even the Catholics. They're all blessing Gog. And you know, and the scripture says in 2 John, it says, if any man comes to you, or anyone comes to you, and does not have this doctrine, and you bless them, and you say, Godspeed, you're going to be partaker of their evil deeds. And that's why it says there in Revelation 18, you know, it says, Babylon the Great is fallen, and has become the hold of every foul spirit and the cage of every unclean bird. Come out of her, my people. Why? That you be not partaker of her sins, and that you receive not of her plagues. So the Christians, it's just almost unbelievable, you know, how this deception has taken hold of the church. Where on one hand, in the New Testament, you've got a clear, concise picture of what happened in the New Testament, where the church is the only Israel of God that there is. There's no two Israels. There's not an Israel of God. Well, maybe there could be an Israel of Satan, I guess you could call it that, since it is the synagogue of Satan. I guess you could call it that, too. But the crux of this, the key to this understanding, this prophecy of Ezekiel, a 2,500-year-old prophecy, is to understand who Gog is. And in the book, I prove scripturally that Gog is Agag. And this is based on the Septuagint. If you go back to the translators of the Septuagint, which was a Bible translation of the Old Testament into Greek by 72 Jewish scholars about 200 years before Christ. This is during the interim of the Testaments between Malachi and Matthew. And in our King James Version of the Bible, and in most of the modern translations, if you go to Numbers 24:7, this is one of the keys that opened the whole thing up to me. And it's not something that I others have written this. It's like what Daniel said about, in Daniel chapter 9, said, I understood by books that God would accomplish 70 years in the destruction of Israel. That goes on to that whole 70 years prophecy. But the way that Daniel came into his understanding was by reading other, probably the prophecies of Jeremiah, the prophecies of Isaiah, and history books that he had around at his time, because the kings all kept chronological records. So he understood this by reading the books, and this is the way I really came into the revelation. Others have discovered this stuff. I just kind of pieced it together and sent it to you. But I've been studying this stuff for a long time, probably about 40, ever since I got saved, I've been immersed in this. And the key here is in Numbers 24:7, where it's a prophecy. Now, Balaam was the prophet here. Now, his prophecies were true, even though he himself was hooked up with a lot of idol worship and finally got a, I think that was his main problem. But in the prophecy of Balaam, he says, he's talking about the king that's going to come from Israel, who is the Messiah. He says, his king shall be higher than Agag. And so Agag was a title of the tribe of Edom. Now, to understand this stuff, you've got to have a little knowledge of, just a little bit of knowledge of Bible history. Now, Agag was the king of Edom. Edom is another name for Esau. Esau and Jacob were the children of Isaac. This is Abraham, and Abraham begat Isaac, and Isaac had Jacob and Esau. They were twins that came out at the same time, and Esau and Jacob formed tribal nations. Jacob had his name changed to Israel and had the 12 tribes of Israel, and they came and colonized the land of Palestine about 1450 B.C., 1450 years before Christ. And Edom, they stayed in the land, and they became a tribal nation. And one of the leading tribes of Edom was Amalek. Agag was actually the king of Amalek. And if you even go into the... and so that's the first thing you need to establish here, that God... Okay, no, I'm skipping here. Okay, so then if you go to the Septuagint translators, the translators of the Septuagint, they translated Agag as Gog. And so Agag is synonymous with Gog. And there's two ancient translations, which is the Samaritan Pentateuch, which is the first five books of Moses, translated by Samaritans into their language, and they also translate Agag as Gog, as well as the Old Latin. And there's several modern translations. So what we find here is that Agag is synonymous with Gog. And Agag was a king of Amalek, which was the kings of, became the leading tribe of the Edomites. Now, this is kind of obscure people. And the thing is, how does Gog, who is from this ancient tribe of Edom in the deserts of Palestine, how does this little tribe of Edom go all the way up to Russia and become, where it says there in the beginning of Ezekiel 38, he is the chief prince, or the prince of Rosh, Meshach, and Tubal, which are old names for Russia. So we've got a journey of thousands of years, a couple thousand years, and a couple thousand miles to go up to this area. And the way that this happened is pretty interesting, because in 126 B.C., there was war. The Jews are in their land, and they're organized under the Maccabees. Now, the Maccabees were the Jews that reigned for about 100 years between the Testaments. They took the power from the Greeks, and then they began to have a war with all the tribes of Edom, which were in the land still, and the Maccabees won the war, and John Hyrcanus was the general of the Maccabees and leader of the Maccabees at the time, and he subdued all the tribes of Edom, and he gave them a choice. He said, you can either, and at the point of a sword, as they're defeated, he said, you can either leave your land, and we're going to drive you out and take everything, your men, women, children, cattle, and just get out of here, or you can submit to all the rules of the Jews, get circumcised, and Josephus, who chronologued all this stuff in the Antiquities of the Jews, at that time, he said the Jews became, the Edomites became none other than Jews. And they were incorporated into the land, into the tribe of Judah. And this is actually recorded in many of the, six or seven different sources I've recorded this, and I've got it, and, where they actually admit in the Jewish Encyclopedia that Edom is in modern Jewry. So this is in their own writings, and I'm not trying to, accuse them of anything. I'm just taking their own words and showing from history that this is what happened. And so Edom became just completely absorbed into Judaism. In fact, in when the Romans came against the Jews in 70 A.D., in Anno Domini, the year of our Lord, that 20,000 Edomites came to fight against the Romans, and, you know, they were all destroyed at that time. The temple was destroyed. And this became the dispersion of the Edomite Jews out of Israel into Babylon and also down into Constantinople and in that area, in those areas. And so,
well, you're moving through your book pretty quick here, but basically, then Agog is mentioned in the Bible. And he is synonymous with Gog. And then we have, you know, we don't want to get too much into history here because there's so much that's in your book. People ought to get your book and read this. But what we do know is that Edom was integrated into Jewry. They became Jews. So we can read about Edom, the Amalekites in the Bible. But what essentially is most important here is that in 70 A.D., you mentioned that date, when Titus, the Roman general, came in and destroyed the temple and destroyed the city of Jerusalem, as was prophesied by Jesus in Matthew 23 and 24. It's significant to note that most of the Jews then were no longer in Israel. I mean, Israel was dissolved, was extinguished, supposedly, as a nation state at that time, and the Jews were dispersed, but many of the Jews fled to Babylon and to the areas around a country called Khazaria, didn't they? So Khazaria became the focus of the Jews. Not many Jews were left, but those that were left had their leadership in places like Babylon, ancient Babylon, where the rabbis were. And they came up at that time with their Talmud, their most holy book. So what you have then is Babylon with the rabbis, their holy book. You have the connection of Gog with them. But the nation of Khazaria, when we come back, let's talk about that specifically. The nation of Khazaria, where that is, south of Russia, exists really today in the form of various nations there. But as author Kessler says, and as you say in your book, The Matrix of Gog, this place was the land of Magog. It's where Gog became the leader, you might say, the demonic Gog. And also the Khazarians, you correctly state, became the Jews. They're not of Jewish blood. They're not of Israelite ancestry, have no connection with the nation of Israel, but they became Jews. They were most of the Jews in the world were Khazarians. They converted, they were pagans, converted to Israel. So therefore, what we have is Gog and Magog, that land, Khazaria, and from there, well, what we have is a horrible plundering and destruction going on in the Middle East, and it's soon to come to the West, too, isn't it?
Oh, it sure is. You know, in fact, it's already here. They've already brought it to us in the form of, like, a psychological warfare, which they've been conducting against the, it's amazing.
Well, even 9-11, you know, we know really who perpetrated 9-11, but all because we're involved in this Gog and Magog. The United States is up to its neck. Working, cooperating with Gog and Magog, and the American people are totally confused and don't even know about it. When we come back, let's talk about that, may we?
Okay. Sure.
All right. I'm with Daniel Patrick today. We're discussing his great book, The Matrix of Gog. I'm Tex Mars. You're listening to Power of Prophecy. Stay with us. We'll be right back. The Matrix of Gog. You know, we're evidently all caught in a terrible matrix. It's you know, the very word Gog to be agog means to be confused, mixed up. But God wants us to understand. Daniel 12, verse 10 says that the wise shall understand in the last days. That's why God has sent men like Daniel Patrick to you. That's why Daniel Patrick has written the Matrix of Gog. He's going to break apart the lines of the matrix, and you're going to be able to figure out where you are in this maze, this puzzle. And you're going to be able to, as a Christian, to identify yourself exactly. You are a member. You're a citizen of the New Jerusalem. You're in the camp of the saints. Wherever you're at, wherever you reside today, you can call it the camp of the saints because Jesus is there with us, all right? Now, you're not an American. You're not a Russian. You're not an Israeli. You're Canadian. You're nothing except a citizen of the New Jerusalem, that great city, okay? That great city, the New Jerusalem that's told about in the book of Revelation. Now, I want to offer you this book, The Matrix of Gog. Now, we couldn't possibly do it justice in this program today, but I want you to know that Daniel Patrick has done a great work here. He's a true man of God. Now, this book, just $18, please add $5 shipping and handling, total of $23. We've got plenty of copies. I'll tell you, it's just came out this week, and everyone here in the ministry says it's really, I mean, it's blasting out. It's going. I'm just shocked. You know, we usually have a book and they move very slow, but this one has taken a hold of people, and I mean, they're just buying it. So I want you to have a copy too, The Matrix of Gog. From the land of Magog came the Khazars to destroy and plunder. You're going to understand Ezekiel 38 and 39 and Revelation 20. They all tie together. And America is part of this. It is. Israel is part of it. 2 Thessalonians is part of it. You're going to understand about Gog and Magog and Israel, all these things. And everything will become clear to you. Well, how do I know that? Because God promised it to you. He said you would know. He said it. And beginning in 1948, you know, all these people, Hal Lindsey, all of them say this began God's time clock and all this. No, 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 no. That became the time clock of Satan. That became when Satan escalated everything. And now we have Gog in the Middle East. He has already conquered Israel. Gog from Magog has come from Khazaria, and he's conquered the land of Israel. The Gogsters, as Daniel Patrick calls them, are here. And they're here in America. I mean, you're hearing about John Hagee. He's promoting Gog and Magog. And you know that George W. Bush promoted them. And Barack Obama is doing their bidding too. Now, it looks like he's becoming a little bit cranky about it, and they're threatening him now, aren't they? He's at the end of his term, and the Jews are telling him, you know, basically, we're going to destroy you. You're coming up against us. But all the rest of them, Cruz and Rand Paul, every one of them are in bed with Gog. This is an amazing thing, friends, and you must understand what's happening in the world of politics today in the United States. Why we're fighting all these wars in the Middle East. Why we've got gulag concentration camps. The United States is operating them across the seas, around the world. Why Russia has come up, and now we have these problems in the Ukraine. All this has to do with Gog and Magog. You've got to have this book. Now, here's how to get your copy. I recommend you buy several more for friends. All you have to do is send $23. It'll take care of it entirely. Send it to Power of Prophecy, 1708 Patterson Road, Austin, Texas, 78733. Now, you can go to our website, powerofprophecy.com, powerofprophecy.com. You're going to see it right there on our front page. It'll tell you how to order it using one of your charge cards, okay? Very easy. But call us during the week, Monday through Friday, here in the ministry, and we'll be glad to send you this book, 1-800-234-9673. Now, you'll get a free subscription to our newsletter, Power of Prophecy. simply for the asking. We'll give you a 6-month free subscription to Power Prophecy. If you're already getting our newsletter, well, we're just going to extend your subscription. We're glad to do that for you. Now, I'm going to be talking about the Matrix of Gog much more. In fact, I'm going to be discussing the camp of the saints. That's what God says. And he says in Revelation 20 that Gog comes up on the four corners of the earth. I mean, he takes over the whole earth. And especially he concentrates on conquering the camp of the saints. He's got your name. I mean, people talk about they're worried about being on the red list or the blue list. Well, I'm telling you, your name is on a list. You, if you know Jesus Christ, your name is on that list. You say, well, I'm going to try to escape it. I'm going to try to make a low profile. I'm not going to give my name out there. Don't put my name on your list, Tex Morse. Hey, listen, the NSA is out there. The CIA is, I mean, we've got 16 major intelligence agencies and they've all got your name. You cannot escape. This is, and we're in it, folks. This is the hour of darkness. Alexander Solzhenitsyn, the great historian of Russia, that's what he called it. This is the hour of darkness. This is what Sergius Nilus, in his book, The Great Within the Small, who gave us the Protocols of Zion, he said the Antichrist is here. He's upon us. Now, nobody believed him. And a dozen years later, 66 million people began to be progressively slain. I mean, this is what happens when Gog takes over. Gog made his move in Russia, and now he's making his move in the United States of America. You'll have to admit things have changed. There's nothing that's the same. You can't go about your life placidly like nothing has happened. You're not going to be allowed that. No, no. They're going to bug you. They're going to fight you. They're going to destroy you. They're going to take away your pensions, everything you've got. I'm telling you, I don't know when. It may be next year. It may be 10 years. But already the signs are here, and we're all trying to stop this thing. We're trying to stop this runaway train wreck. But there it is. The Matrix of Gog. It will take you all the way down to the end. It even tells you some of the horrors of the Jewish holy book, the Talmud. It has a whole section on that in the back. But more than that, it has all the Bible, and you'll find out what Gog is up to, what Magog is doing, and why it affects you. It does. You may not have known this, but all this has been going on behind the scenes. That's why the elite are there. That's why they're doing things, no matter, you know, 80 or 90% of Americans oppose them. They don't care about you. They've got their agenda, and they're going to carry it out. They must carry it out. I'm getting a little worked up here, but it's true. Now let's return to our regular program. My guest today, Daniel Patrick. Well, Daniel, welcome back to Power of Prophecy.
I'm glad to be back. I agree with everything you're saying, and I appreciate you've been like out there in the forefront of the battle. You've always been a hero of mine, and I'm glad to. I'm thrilled. In fact, I had no idea. I was just trying to find somebody to print this book, and I couldn't figure who would even print it. So I called up.
God does amazing things, doesn't he?
It wasn't anything to get lost, you know, like some things do. And I'm elated just to be here and talking with you on this on your program.
Well, thank you. Well, you know, it says in Revelation that God opens the door and no man can shut it. And conversely, he shuts the door and no man can open it. Now, you have a door that's been open here. I could no more have not published this book than the man in the moon. I mean, I didn't have any recourse. I had to publish this book. Now, let's talk some more about the book, because Ezekiel 38:39 prophesies in the last days, Gog will come forth and he'll come up against the land of unwalled villages. Now, tell us about Khazaria and how it came about that they became the Jews, so-called. No relationship to the ancient Israelites. And they ended up in Israel. And now they've conquered Israel. How did all this occur?
It's just one of the most incredible stories that you could ever imagine. And it's so convoluted. And, you know, I was a crypto tech when I was in the service, you know. And I was just bottom echelon, you know, just... But... you know, you get behind the scenes and you're always interested because of, you know, that there are other things going on and you're always interested in this stuff. And so I guess that's maybe one of the reasons why I'm always trying to solve mysteries. And this is the biggest mystery. And like we said, the way you have to identify Gog, that Gog is Agag, the king of Edom. The Edomites are incorporated into Jewry in 126 B.C., then they're scattered in 70 A.D., and some of them hung around the hillsides. There's enough of them there, again, in 126 A.D., 126 years after Christ's birth. There was another one, the Bar Kochba, or I'm not sure if I pronounced his name right, and the Jews were again defeated, and this time the Rome forbade any Jew to remain in the land of Judea. And they were totally broken out, totally scattered out of the country. There was the Christian Jews that had converted to Christianity. This is how they were the beginnings of the church, and they went on to form the church. But all the time being persecuted by these flesh Jews, and a lot of these flesh Jews, they fled up into Babylon, modern Baghdad, and from there they sent proselytizers up through the Caucasus Mountains, a little bit north, into the land of Khazaria. And this was a tribe that, the Khazars, which come from and they led them in a conversion, and they converted the entire tribe. Now, this is all in the Jewish encyclopedia. They repeat this story, and it was all, again, popularized in a book called The 13th Tribe back in the 70s by a man named Arthur Koestler, himself an Ashkenazi Jew. But he was honest enough to go through the history to show that the chosen people, so-called truth, is nothing but a myth, and that they had no. You know, so we'll go back to the Khazars. The Khazars are this giant tribe that's up north of the Caucasus Mountains. They were mainly engaged in tribute. They would tax, and because the caravans would go, the camel caravans would go back and forth from the north, from Europe, and so forth, go into the spices and down in the Middle East, and they'd have to travel through that land, and that's how they made their money, is by extortion and so forth on the people that came through. They were fantastic warriors, engaged in all kinds of battles with the Muslims, and around 900 that there was a doctor who worked for the court of the Sultan in Spain, and he had heard through emissaries and traders coming from that area that there was a bunch of there was a Jewish nation north of the Caucasus Mountains, and he thought, well, maybe there's some of the lost tribes of Israel that had disappeared back in 722 B.C. And he sent letters back there, and he began a letter correspondence with a King Joseph, who was a Kagan. Kagan was the title of their kings, and he asked him. He said, "Oh, are you the 12 tribes of Judah? Some of the lost ten tribes that went into captivity in the Assyrians back in 722 B.C." And he said, "No. We're not from the any of those lost tribes. We are descendants from Togarma through his son, Khazar." And so, this is a very important thing. We find out that these Khazars are what they call, what's called in Ezekiel 38, is called the House of Togarma. Modern language you would call the lineage of Togarma. And this is the Khazar nation that Gog picked up as one of the main components of his army, the Khazars. And this happened around 720 A.D., 720 years after Christ. This entire nation, the Jewish proselytizers went up there and converted King Ulan, who was the Kagan at the time, and the whole nation converted to, they didn't convert to the Judaism of, let's call it, of the Pentateuch, which is the first five books of Moses. They converted to Talmudic Judaism. You know, I've run this stuff down to some people, and I said, well, they're not Jews, they're Khazar. I said, well, but didn't they convert? Well, yeah, they converted, but Jesus said to them in Matthew 23, he says, you guys, you Pharisees, the Jews, I mean, most of these rabbis, say we claim an unbroken line from the Pharisees of the time of the New Testament all the way till today. And Jesus turns to the Pharisees and he says, you guys compass land and sea to make one proselyte, And when he is made, you make him twofold more the child of hell than yourself. So what we've got here is we've got a twofold more the child of hell group of people that converts to Talmudic Judaism in 720 B.C., and then the Jews, the Ashkenazi Jews, which were actually at this time, the Jews that had fled the destruction of Jerusalem in 70 A.D. and again in 126 A.D., went to Babylon, where there was already colonies of Jews in Babylon who had already intermixed with all the local natives of that area and had concocted the Talmud. They send representatives up to Khazaria. Khazaria converts to Talmudic Judaism, and they became, for all intents and purposes, they established synagogues in the land, they immersed themselves in this stuff, and...
Now this is an amazing thing, isn't it,
Daniel? They were driven off the land because this is when Genghis Khan came down and with his golden hordes, and they had battles with them, and the Khazars lost, and they were driven basically into an area that later became known as the Pale of the Settlement, which is where you've got Kiev and that whole southern part. But actually, when you look in Ezekiel 2, it's called the House of Togarmah of the North Quarters. And if you take a line and you go straight, you go from Jerusalem straight up to the North Pole, it goes right through that land. You know, it's funny how that's, and that's kind of an interesting thing too, because that's also another time, it's a minor point, but it's another time element in this whole thing to show when this starts out happening, because they were driven into that area out of a more westerly area that they've been in, Khazaria. They're driven over, and this is where they begin the Zionist movement, to go back to a land that was never given to them. Now, if it's a genetic thing, which they claim, they don't have a genetic hold on it at all. Benjamin Friedman, who was an Ashkenazi Jew, says that, and he converted to Christianity, and his stuff's all over the internet, he says, these guys never had a forefather that even put one toe into the so-called promised land. It's a promised land that's not promised to them. Let's put it that way.
Now, hold on just a minute here, Daniel. So what we've got then is Israel was basically closed down and dissolved practically. The nation of Israel and the city of Jerusalem was destroyed, as Jesus prophesied, by the Romans in 70 A.D. And these Jews, you know, they were dispersed and they were living in Babylon and different places. But there were not very many Jews left in the world. So many had been killed off. And then suddenly they visited, they were called forth to this great, great European kingdom called Khazaria. They had probably 20 or 30 times as many people as did the Jews. The Jews had no kingdom at all, no country of their own. They had been dispersed, but they convinced King Bulan of Khazaria to become a Jew. And then, of course, back in those days, he was, you know, truly a dictator, a king. And he made his pagan people, you know, they were sacrificing each other to the devil and worshiping. They even had the six-pointed star as their symbol. And he told all of his people, you know, you're all going to become Jews. So it turned out that there were 20 or 30 times as many Khazar Jews as there were true Jews. It was sort of like the Great Britain, a small island nation, but then, you know, they helped to found the United States of America. Now we're the colossus, the United States, and England is the small thing. So that,
yeah.
So the Jewish nation of Israel finally today is a little small outpost, but the Khazarians, they became the huge. This is where Dr. Iran Elhaik, the DNA scientist, said, you know, the escalation of the population of Judaism exploded. But it didn't explode because so many people, you know, became Jews that were Jews. It became, well, all these converts from Khazaria. And now, they didn't stay in Khazaria, did they? I mean, evidently, they began to immigrate from the edges of Europe, which is Khazaria, and finally ended up in Poland and places like that in Eastern Europe, right?
Exactly. You know, this again, well, you know, they say that the historians even believe that Kiev, in Ukraine, was probably founded by some of these fellows. And they had some Jews that were dispersed through England and France. They called them diaspora Jews. By the way, they got kicked out of the... They can't account. These so-called diaspora Jews that were in Europe at the time were just numbered in the very low thousands. thousands, like 1,200. There was very few of them. But the main body of Judaism, but there's two main bodies. We have the Ashkenazi Jews, and we have the Sephardic, and then there's other minor sects. But these are the two main Jews, and the Ashkenazi Jews outnumber the Sephardic Jews probably a lot, 10 to 1.
You know,
Sephardic Jews are the ones that when they left Israel, they went south into Egypt and so forth. And Sephard is actually the Hebrew term, maybe Yiddish, I'm not sure, for Spain. And so that name stuck on them. And, of course, they came across in the south, and they got together with the Moors. And that's why they came against Christianity too when they got the power in Spain. But those are the two groups. But for all intents and purposes, like Kostler brings out in his book, The 13th Tribe, for all intents and purposes, a Jew in modern parlance is an Ashkenazi Jew, which are mostly the characters, like probably 95% of them. But at the top, I imagine, if we could get some DNA samples from some of those Rothschilds, I bet we could find some different blood hanging out. I think some of these banker elites, you know, these guys, the money power, these guys had to have a lot of money because they were the kings, the Kagans. And I always think that's funny. We've got a Kagan on the Supreme Court right now. Remember that lady that got in stuck on there not too many, maybe last year?
Yeah, her last name is Kagan.
Her name is Kagan, and that was the kings. That's what they called the kings of Khazari were Kagans. So I think at the top, I think these characters know who they are. I think for the most part, most Judaics on the lower levels, they have no idea. They're just like a lot of nominal type Christians that don't know what the heck's going on. But they're all guilty. Everybody is guilty. We're all guilty in the eyes of God. And a lot of these guys are just born into a religion. But it's a supremacist religion, and because it's based on the Talmud, and it's a very racist, probably the most racist book that's ever been written, and it's probably the most anti-Christ. Well, they have in the Talmud, which is the religion that the Khazar is converted to, Jesus Christ is pictured in hell in boiling fecal matter, as well as on all the apostles. Mary is portrayed as a prostitute and a whore. And there's no book like it. It's called the Babylonian Talmud, and that's why the lady there that rides the beast, in her forehead was a name written, Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and abominations of the earth. There's only one religion in the world that has a Babylonian book for its basis of its religion, and it's written into their heads, and that's the Babylonian Talmud. And that book is a book of lies and deception. Jesus told them, when Jesus came along there in Matthew 23, they only had what they called the oral tradition. This was the Talmud that had not yet been codified. But he says, ye, by your traditions, have made void the law of God. And the traditions that he's talking about is the traditions of the Talmud.
Now, the Jews
is converted to. It was... They don't. When they go to yeshiva and study Torah, they have two names for it. But the Torah that they study is Talmud. These guys don't even really know the Bible.
Oh, that's true. They don't even have to open up the Bible at all to become a rabbi. They have their own holy book, the Talmud. Now, okay, so we have the Khazars, the so-called Jews, who genetically we know now from DNA research are not the seed of Abraham. But they say they are God's chosen. They say they are the seed of Abraham. They deny DNA science. They have now moved from Poland and other places where they were back to this place of called Palestine in 1948. And they went there and they began to kill people and take over their land. And they told the Palestinians, God gave this land to us. We are the seed of Abraham. They lied about who they were, and the American Christians believe this. We believe the Khazars and their lie. We believe Gog and Magog, and that's who they are. They're Gog and Magog that have come down now and conquered Palestine. And wow, what have we got here? What are the Christians to do now? Because They've fallen into the hands of Gog. But Gog is not finished with taking Israel, right? And Magog.
Oh, no, it's still going on. And because, you know, we have to remember that we are Israel. You know, this reminds me, when I first got converted and I was going to a small Pentecostal church down in Southern California, and my pastor, he made the requisite trip to Israel to go over there and see what he thought was the fulfillment of Bible prophecy, you know. And so he comes back and he relates the story. When he gets over to Israel, he ends up staying with a Palestinian Christian family.
Hmm.
And he got really close to them. And toward his end of his stay there, the father of the family says, he turns to him and says, you know, brother, he says, why do the American Christians support the Jews who hate Jesus and are killing so many of us Christian Palestinians and driving us out of our homes? And why do they do this? And my pastor told me, he looked at me and says, you know, I didn't know what to tell him. I was absolutely speechless. And this guy was a preacher. I didn't know what to tell him, and I didn't, because the prophecies are all against him. You know, this guy had been brainwashed in Bible college, you know, by this dispensational delusion that came out of, you know, Schofield and his Bible, which was, anyhow, we can't get into that, but
I wish we could.
this is what I'm saying about the church. It's almost like a schizophrenic approach to Christianity, where you've got God. I mean, can you picture Jesus blessing, especially when you see these scriptures, you know, the pictures of these poor people that are being driven out of their homes, bulldozed and everything, and killed, and many of them being real true Christians and supporting this, and it's because of this misunderstanding of prophecy. The prophecy teachers, I hold really accountable, because they have fostered a delusion on people, and it really makes me upset. I get a little angry about it, not just because of the delusion that's there, you know. And I'm hoping that this book can correct it, and in your book, I mean, they've got two books right here that are like a 1-2 punch that should knock this lie down for good and all. And I just pray that people pick it up, they get an understanding of this stuff, and are able to explain it. If they can't explain it, buy some of these things and send them to your local Christian Zionist pastor, and just pray over these. Pray that God wakes them up. Because this is the end. This is like we're at a very crucial point right now with all of this. And my prayer is that that God will use this to wake people out of their delusion.
Well, He will, Daniel. I promise you, God is like that. And more we're seeing a great movement, and people are now understanding. They're understanding that we're caught up in this matrix of Gog, and it's a great battle. But I want to thank you for what you've done, contributing this excellent book. We're going to push it very, very hard here in the ministry, because it deserves it. There are many who will come up against us because of your book. And you yourself, you know that. But nevertheless, folks, get this book, The Matrix of Gog. Phone us at 1-800-234-9673, The Matrix of Gog by Daniel Petrick. I was very pleased to write a very brief, short introduction to it. From the land of Magog came the Khazars to destroy and plunder. Daniel Petrick, thank you for this book.
Well, Tex, I'm thrilled to be on your program here, and I'm thrilled that you're pushing this book, and I just can't thank you enough, and I just pray blessings of God on you and your work and your ministry and God's protection.
Been great talking with you, and my prayer is that you'll tune in and discover the power of prophecy.